Carlos, how worried are you right now about the team?
Well, I'm not going to say that I'm worried, but it's, you know, like, we don't have too much time, you know, and it's getting, you know, guys, teams are right behind us, and it's becoming now, what, 15 games? The way you look at it is we're still in control of the situation, you know, we're still in control of achieving the ultimate goal, but we got to go out and do it.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Friday, September the 12th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. Doesn't have to be a paid subscriber. We have great interaction in our chat. You can be free and just come join it, have some fun. And if you want to stick around and for the price of a cup of coffee a month, get some premium content, well, even the better. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast, and yeah, I'm coming to you a couple of days early. I thought it was important, and I'll start off by, you know, just saying over the last couple of days, you probably haven't seen much tweeting, and I didn't give you any premium content, and I had intended maybe to, and it's not because the Mets lost a couple of really bad games, and not because of how they played the last week. I think, you know, a couple of things with some of the stuff going on in the world, and then, you know, with 9/11, I thought yesterday with 9/11, and I know it's not... You know, it's like, okay, Mike, it's been 9/11, there's been games of 9/11, there's been Subway Series games of 9/11, and, you know, why this year did you feel a little less inclined to interact? And I think a lot of it just has to go with, you know, a lot of the stuff that's going on in the world. And I don't use this microphone and pulpit to talk politics. That's not why you're here. The reason you're here is because you're trying to get away from that. You're trying to enjoy your life. You're trying to connect with people and put away a lot of the differences that tend to, you know, get us all wound up against each other. But I was very bothered by some of the things that have happened over the last 48 hours. And then you have 9/11, you have people sharing pictures and stories. And I think, you know, part of that is some of the young people that maybe were just babies or 1-2 years old now becoming young adults. And then their perspective, it just became quite a bit. And then you add in the Mets losing and the negativity on social media. And quite honestly, I just said, you know, this is a recipe to just, you know, not provide good content. So, you know, I took a couple of days off. I'm back. I'm fine. I'm ready to rock and roll. I hope you understand that. I hope you appreciate that. And, you know, you guys all were still going at it in the chat. The chat's becoming saucy at times. And all I'll say about that, if you're over at the Substack, you know, chats are always a tough thing. You never know how that's going to go. People tend to get personal in there. They start fighting. It's basically a virtual bar where people are meeting up, and instead of having drinks and watching the game on the television, they're basically, going at it digitally. And all I ask is that you respect each other. You don't get personal. You don't curse. And, you know, if somebody tends to be more negative or more positive than somebody else, it's like Twitter. You just sometimes you just got to walk away, and that doesn't offend me. I want to keep that thing going and open, and I think one of the things that hopefully it can do in the future is maybe provide a forum where I could get a little bit more direct feedback. I know some people like to email me. Sometimes email's hard to keep up with. But anyway, it's my intent here is to get much more interaction on the Talking Mets podcast that sometimes I haven't been good at over the course of the history of the show, because it's been I talk, you listen, you like, and maybe you send me an email or a tweet, and away you go. So that's just, you know, the way I'm going to start, kind of giving you, you know, hey, Mike, you haven't really been around for a couple of days. What's going on? I know I tweeted out I was taking a little bit of a hiatus, and it was well worth it to me personally. And I hope that what we do here, especially over the next couple of weeks with the Mets, provides some respite from the real world. Because you guys could use, I know I could use it. I'm sure some of you guys could use it. Maybe all of you could use it. I don't want to speak for anybody. And the Mets aren't making it easy. So let's get to the baseball part. The Mets aren't making it easy. And I think that, and the reason I came to you guys today is, well, today is an interesting day because it's a conflicting day. A great Met has come home. Jacob DeGrom is going to make his first appearance at Citi Field since he left after the 2022 season against his former club. And, you know, starting there, DeGrom is a complicated figure. I'm sure he'll get a tribute. I'm sure the fans will cheer him. I don't think that he's going to get many boos. And DeGrom was a great Met. And for a while, I think you saw as close, and maybe not in terms of the wins and certainly not in terms of the innings pitched, although he pitched over 200 innings for the Mets 3 years in a row, and that's, in this day and age, pretty significant. But you saw as close to what a Tom Seaver or a Bob Gibson at their peak, who they were from DeGrom from, oh, you know, 2018, late 2017, up until he left in 2022. And I think the only thing that really got in his way, especially the last couple of years, is that he was about to pop and have Tommy John surgery again. I think he tried to avoid it. I think all the signs were there. We kind of knew it. Every time he would miss a start or be taken out, you'd hold your breath, and then it would come back. Ah, it's nothing. It's precautionary. And then Texas gives him the contract the Mets wouldn't, and away you go. He pops his elbow, and he's out. He was out basically 2 years. I mean, he pitched 9 starts in his first 2 years with the Texas Rangers. And look, he's back. You know, maybe he's not vintage DeGrom from 2018 or 2019 or that insane run he had before he hurt himself in 2021. But he's pretty good. You know, 11-7 record, 2.78 ERA. You know, almost 10 strikeouts per nine. He's got not quite the same control and command that he might have had at his apex, but he's pretty good. I mean, you know, his WHIP is under one. He's a 5-inning pitcher now. You know, he's probably late career Pedro Martinez. I can't believe Jacob DeGrom is 37 years old. So at this point, you know, I have no animosity towards DeGrom. I think the interesting thing about DeGrom is I don't know if he ever embraced New York. I think Mets fans embraced him. He never had the personality that, you know, you see from Alonso or Lindor, Nimmo. You know, even with some of the kids and some of the emotion and expression and interaction you've seen with McClain and Tong in just a couple of starts, you didn't see that from DeGrom very often. I think one of the most interactive parts of DeGrom was back in the 2015 postseason after the Game 1 win in the Division Series against the Dodgers. I think it was DeGrom and Daniel Murphy on the dais, and I think DeGrom was playing with, or maybe it was Murphy was playing with DeGrom's chair. I can't remember, but I remember that being some of that interaction. And I've heard mixed reviews from people who have interacted with DeGrom one-on-one. I've heard, you know, good things, bad things, but that's not the point. I think DeGrom deserves to be recognized. I think DeGrom deserves to be shown some love. I don't think his arm's length nature with the fans of the city had anything to do with not liking anybody. I mean, I just don't think he's a spotlight guy. I mean, how much have you really heard from him, even though he's been playing every day in Texas? I mean, he's not a superstar that really goes out there and pines for the camera. Yeah, he's very much about execution and getting the job done, and that's okay. I think there's a lot of what-ifs, and I certainly have what-ifs. I was upset when DeGrom left. I wasn't totally surprised. I think at the time, because Justin Verlander was, you know, not obviously a little older, but on the market, and how the Mets quickly pivoted to Verlander and how you were in that need to win now while you're trying to rebuild the farm system. It's a fungible ace. You know, Verlander is a Hall of Famer, has accomplished. It didn't hurt as much because right after DeGrom left, the Mets signed Verlander, and then they went out and they brought back Nimmo, and you know what happened this offseason of 2022 into 2023. So it almost got covered up, and he went to Texas and he went out of the league and you didn't see him. Mets haven't really seen much of him. Yeah, Texas won a championship, but he wasn't there. He was hurt. He wasn't on the big stage. So I don't think we've really processed. I know I haven't processed DeGrom, but I think it's starting to hit. I think it'll hit tonight. Is it weird seeing him in a Texas Rangers uniform? Eh, I don't know about that. At this day and age with ball players, seeing former great players in other teams' uniforms, I think has become more of a common thing, so you're not that surprised. It would be, you know, as a Mets fan growing up, and I think a lot of Mets fans can understand that, if Mets fans are still surviving seeing Tom Seaver in a Reds uniform, or Daryl Strawberry and Doc Gooden in a Yankees uniform, or David Cohn in a Yankees uniform, like a young Mike Silva in 1988, 1989, the thought of those three guys being in a Yankees uniform and winning a championship, I mean, come on. You would have had me crawl up in a ball for a week, right? I mean, look, I'm not going to compare it to Tom Seaver with the Reds, but I think it's interesting. And the what if, I think right now, especially as you see how the Mets are playing, is if a DeGrom type of ace was at the top of this rotation with the young kids and with a couple of these guys the Mets have been relying on all year that essentially are 4 and 5 starters and really over the last couple of months have been 5th and 6th starters because of the amount lack of length they give, would things be different? And I think that's a conversation for the offseason. I think that, as I said last week, it's pretty clear to me what direction this team needs to go. And I think that, I mean, this is a critically important homestand. I don't have to tell you that. The Mets have to, if anything's going to come out of this regular season, the Mets are a really good home team. They may win 50 games at home, which if you win 50 games at home, a team that's a playoff-bound team or a team of the Mets' caliber on paper going in the season, you figure you're a lock for 90 wins. And this team will not win 90 wins unless they run the table the rest of the year. This is a critical homestand. You would like this night to be more about DeGrom. And I'm personally, if the Mets were in a different position, it wouldn't bother you if DeGrom went out there and dominated. It wouldn't surprise me tonight. I think with all that's going on with the losing, with the negativity, with the stress, with how the Mets are just trying to survive, and that's what really this is about, surviving the regular season. Tonight is not going to be as comfortable and as fun as it probably should be, and it is what it is at this point. You know, this team right now is going to be a disappointment. That's etched in stone. Whether they make the postseason, don't make the postseason, my feelings about this team are not going to change. Obviously, not making the postseason is going to add another layer of drama. And when I say drama, I think it's going to make for some really interesting offseason debate. I think the fan base that had somewhat of a turnaround last year is starting to regress again. And I understand it. But sometimes I think that they have to really look at the big picture. And I think ultimately, and if you go back and listen to shows throughout the summer, I've really been on both sides of this fence with the Mets. I probably was overly optimistic and Pollyannish or maybe blind to some of the red lights that were out there in April, May, and early June. And part of the reason why I didn't really bother with it, because the prior year they were able to figure it out, and it's a long season. And as you get through that getting to know you phase and that early, you know, what do they need phase, if you stay around a certain record, you're really not going to worry too much. He's like, hey, you know, you rip off 7 out of 10, all of a sudden you go from a little over 500 to you're solidified in a playoff spot, and there's 3 wild cards, don't worry about it. And the Mets were 21 games over 500. Look, I was in the building the night that Peterson had that complete game. When I walked out of the building that night, you would not have been able to sell me in any way, shape, or form that the Mets would be where they are right now on September 12th. But similar to any other shaky foundation, the Mets' shaky foundation, and maybe the straw that broke the proverbial camel's back was Kodai Senga going down with a hamstring. Since that point, and it's all over social media, so I don't have to tell you, the Mets have played more like the Rockies and the White Sox and the Washington Nationals than the Philadelphia Phillies, the Dodgers, the Padres. And they were not that long ago when the Giants, right, around August 1st, when the Giants came to Citi Field, the Mets were in first place. And now first place is very far away and long gone, and probably within a, you know, a week to 10 days, the Phillies will clinch an NL East championship. So after that, as we got through the middle of the summer, there's been a couple of shows that I got a lot of criticism for. One, it was, hey, I don't think this is a playoff team. It was right after the first Red Series, after the All-Star break. I didn't like what I saw. I saw an unserious team. And as soon as I said that, as soon as I felt that, hey, this is an in-the-muck team, and I don't know if it's worth investing in this team, what, did they rip off 6 or 7 in a row? And then they started to stabilize, and you know, Brazenbaum doesn't cover first base in San Diego, and they go into this spiral. But the trade deadline brings in a super bullpen and maybe a center fielder that could add a little bit of offense. And it hasn't worked. And I think the thing is, every time this team shows signs of turning around, they don't just regress. They go into these spiral losing streaks. I mean, they don't stop. Like, perfect example is last night. They have a 4-0 lead. And, you know, a team with solid starting pitching gets a big performance from a starter last night, gets them into the 7th inning, hands it off to their bullpen, and they close it out, and they stop the bleeding. Well, the Mets don't have that starter right now. Is it the kids? We'll see. So far, McClain is the only one I could say has potential to be that person. And that's probably part of the problem. Part of the problem is that when you pitch number 5 starters every day that could more than likely just be give you 5 innings, you're leaving each game up to a lot of variability. You're leaving it up to B and C relievers, that the reason they're not elite relievers or starters is because they're kind of fringy on that point. Look at Reed Garrett. You're leaving a lot of games up to the bullpen, which even with good bullpens is tricky because those guys get overused. And again, bullpen arms are bullpen arms for a reason. I think the offense is a good offense, but I think it's an offense that sometimes doesn't hit situationally well. Is it the approach from the hitting coaches? I'm having a hard time believing that big league ball players are controlled that much by hitting coaches. That could be more about how the young hitters were developed. I don't think Alonso, Soto, Nimmo, Lindor have been in the league a long time. I don't think the hitting coach matters, quite frankly. I think the only way that they matter or have an impact is giving them information to help them process how to do whatever they do on a daily basis. I think a big chunk of this season, the offense has been inconsistent because the young players are not there yet. And I think one of the more damning tweets is Jared Seidler from Baseball Prospectus, really saying that he believes that the kids like Alvarez, Mauricio, Acuna, Vientos, Beatty are second division starters. And I've kind of said that. Now, I think they're potential component players, but I don't know. And for a large part of the season, they weren't. And now they've been. But on periods of time where Alonso and Lindor and Soto slump or aren't perfect, those guys haven't really been able to pick up the slack. Maybe Vientos for a little bit. The at-bat by Alvarez the other night was a synopsis of the young kids this season. It was an immature, illogical at-bat. There was nothing about that at-bat that screamed big league starter, much less big league star. It was any goodwill that Alvarez had over the last few weeks and the ability to fight through a pretty tough injury got thrown away. Now, Duran is a tough closer. I get it. He's every bit as good as Diaz when he's on. Throws 102, whatever. But if you're just going to go up there and swing from your heels and not even care where the pitch is, he could have rolled that pitch up there. To me, that was a synopsis of a big part of the young kids this season. So when you add all that, I said they weren't a playoff team, and then I kind of changed, and I said, hey, this is a good bullpen, and I mean, if they get going, if the season ends with them not making the playoffs, it's not lost now. It was lost in August when they started to hit. They went through a period where they're averaging 7 runs a game, and they had a losing record because their starters couldn't hold 5 and 6 run leads against second division clubs. Because their starters allowed a Miami team that couldn't hit their way out of a paper bag average about 8 runs over a weekend. And that's really what this is about. The pitching hasn't been good enough to allow the kids time to find themselves, to mitigate some of the weaknesses in the bullpen. And truthfully, when you have the kind of starting pitching the Mets have gotten for a few months now, and I'm not even going to go into numbers, you know, you saw it, you know it's been bad. You really shouldn't be a playoff team. You're probably a 90-loss team, which is what they're on pace to be over the course of half a season. And last year, remember all the times when I complained about the walks in the bullpen, and everybody said, they're winning. They had the best record in baseball from June 1st on. And I said, you know, this is a problem. Teams that do this, the teams that are similarly doing this, are 100-loss teams. The Mets are way on the other end. How are they doing it? And they figured it out, and they got through it. And a lot of that had to do with Diaz. Diaz is kind of like Michael Jordan on the 86 Bulls with this bullpen. He's surrounded by nobody a lot of times. Nobody even close to being in his caliber. And if not for Diaz, this could have been a very ugly season. This could have been a 100-loss season. That's how valuable Diaz has been at this point. So the point is, this season is going to be a disappointment when the bell when the final bell, the dismissal bell comes up, and maybe the Mets are a wild card team, maybe they're not. As they head into a 3-game wild card series on the road, by the way, they will be a disappointment. There's nothing that will happen between now and then. Even if they rattled off, I think, every win, I still think fans would have in the back of their head how bad they've been for so long and all the doubt. Now, in a game that's a tournament, that could change in 72 hours. Logically, and we talk about probabilistic outcomes here, that doesn't seem likely. They've played so bad on the road. Now, sure, they've been 500 against good teams this year. Most of the damage has been done by bad teams, which is the real kick on the rear end. But probabilistically, I can't see them going to LA, San Diego, Chicago, wherever they go, and winning 2 out of 3. Getting good enough pitching. Now, talk to me in 10 days, and you see a couple of more McLean outings that are really solid, and Tong and is showing his development. Sproat all of a sudden is trending upward. Maybe I'll change my mind. I mean, that bullpen still will make me nervous. I mean, here we are on September 12th. I don't know what you're going to get out of Ryan Helsley day in and day out. You're going to hold your breath with Ryan Helsley. The guy you all hate because for some reason Drew Gilbert is Lenny Dykstra all of a sudden. Tyler Rogers is the only one you could trust out of the bullpen. And the reason you don't like him is because he doesn't strike anybody out. He just throws strikes. He gets soft contact. Something that, by the way, Dan Quisenberry did for his entire career, and he was a pretty good pitcher. So, you know, I think all the fears that we had, this not being a playoff team, the reality, remember the show I did, the reality situation? This is an in-the-muck team. I've been saying for a while it's an in-the-muck team, but I was like, it's underperforming, but they're not going to fall all the way back into the muck. Well, they're in the muck. They're in the muck. And that's going to be who they are, regardless of a handful of games that get them into a third wild card. Now, where they go from here and how I feel about them, that's a conversation for another day. I'm not going to get into, is this rock bottom? Oh, this is like 07. Oh, fire Mendoza. Oh, fire Stearns. Oh, break up the core. That's all talk radio talk. You want to talk about that? That's what's going to make you feel better because you're angry. That's for you. That's not going to happen here because all those things are nonsense. You don't like the core. You're angry at the core. You want to let Alonso walk? Fine. That might happen. Where are you going to get 30 home runs and 100 RBIs? You're tired of Lindor. You're tired of Nimmo. You don't like Soto anymore. Okay. You want to trade him? Not easy. What do you think? You think you're going to get you want to rebuild now? 5 years into Cohen with all the young pitchers coming up that may be really good, you're going to rebuild and waste their early prime years on a rebuild. You're going to do that. You want to fire Mendoza? What do you think? You think another manager is going to come here? I mean, you'll get a manager. You think a good manager is going to come here and say, okay, if I don't win in 12 months, I'm gone, and the next one comes in? You want to fire Stearns and start over? Oh, that's going to allow, you know, executives around the league, top executives are really going to want to come work here on that. Really want to come work here on that. I'd sign. I mean, look, an executive will, if you get paid, why not? You get a chance. You can't yell, scream, and throw tantrums when things don't go their way. We overrated where this team was because of what happened in October of last year. They still were very much in transition. Stearns inherited a team that has had inconsistent leadership over the course of half a decade. And when they made it to the World Series and was showing good positive trends earlier in the prior decade, they weren't really all as well run as we thought under Sandy Alderson. They never put it together. And yes, I understand the owners and whatnot. You don't fix that in 5 minutes. You don't spend your way out of it. The only reason they're even a conversation team for postseason and championship since Cohen took over is because he spent tons of money. Because he didn't want to come in and this would be year five of a rebuild and maybe they would start to be showing positive signs. He didn't have that luxury for the brand. He needed to engage his fan base and potential new fans and not widen the gap with the Yankees and other forms of entertainment after he spent a couple billion on the thing. And he wants to get things built in the area. You think anybody wants to build the little village next to Citi Field for a team that's losing 100 games and marketing the future? No, I don't think so. So the reality is where it is. And we did not realize that they were in more of a transition because we were, you know, provided some comfort by what happened last year and the pitching, the veteran pitching. Maybe they had career years, those guys, whatever was left. Maybe Manaea, who I think is hurt, had a career year. Maybe Quintana, who's actually pitching really well in Milwaukee, you know, it was better than we thought. You know, maybe, you know, a couple of bounces go here or there bad. If Lindor doesn't hit the ball over the fence, you know, maybe things are looked at differently even going into this year. I mean, the margin of error last year was thin. That team was three outs away from maybe Pete Alonso not even being back and you all not looking at Pete Alonso the same way because of a drop pop-up a couple of innings earlier and, you know, falling over his bat on a ground ball. So what I'm saying to you guys is this team is a disappointment. To be angry about it every day for the rest of the season, that's not going to change anything. We know what the issues are and where the improvements need to be made. They can't happen right now. And here's the real piece of information that you better get through your head and you better get through your head right now. Stearns isn't going anywhere. At least for another 3 years, because he's got a contract. And the manager is probably not going anywhere, because how is it the manager's fault if the starters can't go five innings? The lineups, I'm not so sure he's the only one making that lineup. And, all right, you want to complain about the pitching coach or the hitting coach? All right, fine. Jeremy Hefner will have a job in 30 seconds walking out that door. And maybe there's stuff we don't know, and maybe it'll come out after the season. The hitting coach, you want to bring back Chili Davis? You could bring back in Keith Hernandez, Mike Piazza, Daniel Murphy, whatever. Those guys, the veterans at least, are going to hit because of the way they're going to hit, because of the way they're going to hit. And the kids, if they're being taught a certain way in the minor leagues, it does not matter when they get to the big leagues, because Stearns ain't bringing anybody in the big leagues that's any different than what they've been teaching in the minor leagues. So it clearly, in my opinion, who they have in the dugout, if they get fired, it's because they're not teaching what the organization wants. And I have a hard time believing he would sit back the entire year and not do something. We'll see. Maybe more will come out. The biggest thing I think situationally is when there are runners on base in less than two outs, I think sometimes the hitting the ball hard and trying to hit it over the fence leads to less execution in getting runners in from third. You know, the one who does it the best usually is Nimmo, and then Beatty maybe to a lesser degree. Just go the other way. Don't try to, like, you know, hit a home run. Just try to move the chains. Maybe that's You know, and I don't have data to support that. That's what my eyes, and I watch a lot of Mets baseball, says and sees. And oh, is this like 07 or is this a collapse? I don't care. You know, I saw someone tweet. I apologize if it was to me. I just saw it. Maybe I don't want to not. I don't want to take credit for something I didn't come up with. Someone said the last two to three months has been like living the last couple of weeks of 07 every day. I get it. I get it. But there is a difference. 07 was a veteran team on in an organization with a thin offense and a limited budget. This is a veteran team with a mixture of youth, with some more promising youth on the way, with a budget that could change if a right opportunity presents itself. Big difference. Big difference. I will not feel different about the Mets' future this season, win, lose, or draw, playoffs or no playoffs, championship or no championship, because you're starting to see the fruits of their development labor. And Stearns now has not one, but two amateur drafts under his belt. He's going to have two full minor league seasons. I think he knows what he's got there. I think the hardest decision this offseason is going to be the kids he inherited at the big league level, the Vientos, the Alvarez, the Beatties. Are they component players on a good club, a championship club? I don't know if they're more than that. Right now, that's the best you're going to get. Component positional players on a championship club. Are they what Jared Seidler is saying? They're a starter on a second division club. Sometimes starters on second division clubs could be good component players. Is that enough? As you see some decline from Lindor with age, what if Alonso's not there? How are you making up 30 and 100? Not easy. Sometimes money doesn't matter if there's nobody that worthwhile to take it. So I guess what I'm saying is to survive the rest of the season, because the Mets are surviving, I think understanding what this team is right now and accepting it, as much as it makes you angry, accepting the fact that my fear about them not being a playoff team in July was correct, accepting the fact that I said this is an in-the-muck team is correct. And by the way, I got a lot of grief for being angry about Kodai Senga and how I hit him below the belt. And looking back, maybe I got overboard. But how disgraceful is it that a guy that the organization built an entire pitching staff around can't even come in and give them a start in Philadelphia and give them five or six innings of two-run ball after all the support he got? I shouldn't be angry. What I said a couple of weeks ago was unfair. Looks a lot better today. You feel confident going into 26 that, you know, he's got a contract, that if the Mets built the rotation around him again, that this isn't going to be the same situation at this time next year? Two out of the 3 years of his tenure here have been utter disasters. Utter disasters. But that's a separate point. But that's symptomatic of the frustration and the disappointment. So as I, you know, come out of the little hiatus and the chaos and the sadness of the world around us, and then the Mets adding that little extra stick of the knife, the proverbial knife, I think we all need to just take a step back. I think we need to enjoy tonight and tip our hats to a great Met. There'll be some sadness and thoughts of what if. What if DeGrom was in this rotation? Hopefully, after seeing DeGrom leave and maybe have a relationship of arm's length with the fans, the fizzle out of Harvey, the fizzle out of Syndergaard, you know, maybe some of the unfulfilled potential of Mats and pulling the rug out of Wheeler too soon. Maybe this next generation of young kids, the McClains, the Sproats, the Tongs, who knows? Maybe Winiger and some of the others are right behind. You know, maybe now we could appreciate it more. Maybe now the Mets can have that next, you know, maybe now they have the actual three aces, or, you know, I hate to put monikers on it, but the three aces that never were before. But regardless of what happens, regardless of how the rest of the next couple of weeks ends up, I don't think we should all of a sudden just, you know, don't take a few bad components of a house that was built well and has been fixed up well and say, it's not where I want it to be. Let me just bulldoze the whole place. Because that's how you got here. You know it and I know it. So anyway, wanted to come to you on this Friday. Wanted to do a show. I'll be back on Sunday. It'll be an interesting weekend. I think we'll have a lot to talk about on Sunday. Hopefully it's a lot more positive than it's been the last couple of weeks. And of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMets, no G. And I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And join the chat, join for free, premium content, whatever works for you. Premium content is just a price of a cup of coffee. Till Sunday, take care, everybody.